The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Welcome to the repack for Acme Packing Company. I'm Justice Mosqueda. I'm joined here by Evan Tex Western. Say what's up to the people, Tex.
Hey, everybody. I'm sure you're all here to listen to the news about the important football news of the weekend in Wisconsin. That's Paul Chryst getting fired. So we can, Packers won. Yay. It wasn't a completely lost weekend of football.
Yay. I don't know about yay.
Yay. Yay.
Packers won 27-24 in overtime. They knocked Brian Hoyer out within, what was it, a drive? Two drives?
Second drive. Yeah. Second last play of the second drive.
Rookie Bailey Zappe.
Zappe. It's Zappe. Confirmed. Yeah. Zap would be so much better because we could use all the Zap Brannigan jokes, but yeah. Unfortunately.
Scored a touchdown on us on a play that
shouldn't
probably,
have happened.
Yeah, probably was late. I heard the excuses too for the referee. Why are there so many referee apologists? I never understand this.
No.
People are like, the way the rule is written, you look at the play clock, it goes to zero, then you look back at the center and see if he snaps. If that took you 3 seconds to look from the play clock down to the center, you shouldn't be refereeing NFL games.
All right. Yeah. So by the time that they would have done that, the play clock would have already reset to 40 and then they would have gotten the snap off. So like if the play clock has already reset to 40, you know that it has already hit zero and it's a delay of game. Like I know the Packers get away with a little bit, like right on the edge there, right? Like snapping the ball right around the time the clock hits zero, but not 3 full seconds after the play clock hits double zeros. That's ridiculous.
It was a pregnant pause for
sure. Yes.
they asked LaFleur about it. Seemed like he got told right before he went up for the presser. They asked Rodgers about it. Rodgers had no idea what the heck they were asking. So it's not something that the team is like mad about, I don't think, because I don't think they actually caught it. I actually listened to both pressers. I listened to LaFleur and Rodgers and all those guys, like who was up there today. Rashawn Gary was up there. And then I listened to the Patriots one. Holy crap, Bill Belichick says nothing. Like it's comedic. Like he went up there, like, what happened? Rodgers just too good. He's too good. He's too accurate. He makes you pay. And then they're asking him like just everything. What'd you tell Bailey Zappe? Like, what'd I tell him? Like, when he came in, what speech did you give him? He goes, speech. I don't know. It's crazy. They asked him about the third quarterback, and he's like, well, we didn't need him. So I guess you won't know.
Oh my God.
Oh my goodness gracious. They don't give him anything.
He's incredible. He is the master, and yet he has so much disdain for the fact that he even has to get up there and answer questions at any point. It's hilarious. Like he is, if Ted Thompson, you know, had to get up there after every game instead of, you know, twice a year and give a press conference. Yeah. That's what Ted Thompson would do.
I want to do just right off the bat. Let's do an inventory of what we have on this Packers team. Because I feel like this is a self-reflection point in the season. Mm-hmm. You almost lost to a third-string quarterback at home. Yeah. You're about to go, what is this? I think this is the first leg of 5 games in 5 stadiums, or that might have been last week. I can't remember. They're about to go through a ton of travel, right? I mean, they're about to go play in England next week at ungodly time in the morning.
That's going to be a lot rougher for you than it is for me on Eastern time, man. I wouldn't...
6:30.
I'll promise you this. I'll get up and write up inactives at 8 a.m. Eastern instead of I'm not making you get up at 5.
Thank Jeez. God.
Yeah. I got you covered there. But yeah. All right. Let's do it.
Quarterback, Aaron Rodgers. Is he good? I have no idea if he's good.
I don't know anymore. Like he was dropping a few dimes there in the second half after looking like shit the entire first half. I don't know. I don't know what kind of Rodgers we're going to get on any given moment.
I was joking. What was it? Like the second drive Zappy was in? I was like, who's going to throw more passes in this game, Rodgers or Zappy? Because I thought the Packers would have just popped the football and just said, like, we're going home. We're going to get this lead. They just could never pull away. They could never pull away on this team. New England was running the ball well, all that stuff. I think Aaron Jones confirmed to good. The fact that he was breaking away on some of these inside runs was great because, you know, they kind of had him running on the edge and the pin and pull stuff and had Dylan kind of be the inside runner. They changed a lot in their run game this week. They were holding. We talked about how on those RPOs, right, like Tampa, that goal line play against that Za'Darius Smith ran down, right, against the Vikings. Yep. Their RPOs where there's no one handling the end man on the line of scrimmage, and they're basically trying to force Rodgers to pull the ball because they're covering the pass. They're chasing down the backside of the run. He's got to pull it himself. They're handling that now with split zone, which is, you know, the off-ball tight end cutting across the formation. They were doing that in Pony, which we hadn't seen all season.
Yeah.
They got away from the bubble zone stuff from Pony, at least when they didn't have the slice guy, the kickout guy on split zone. That was nice to see. So their offense is adjusting some, but it's still not like clicking. I mean, Rodgers,
right.
We talked about it at halftime. Like he had the shot to, who was it? It was Watson. And then
I think there was a Dobbs shot. Yeah. I think there was one to Dobbs and one to Lazard too in the first half.
Because, yeah, I mean, New England, for all the talk everyone's talking about and points per game, I just saw it's at the lowest it's been since, like, 2006 or something. It's just defense is sitting in too high. The Patriots were playing them in a lot of one high, which is theoretically when you want to take these shots, and they just weren't able to come down with them.
Right. Yeah, and, I mean, Rodgers looked off on in terms of his placement of the ball in the first half. A couple of them looked like he overthrew or at least at the very least had a miscommunication with his receivers. But then second half, I mean, there were a couple that he put right on the money. The one to Lazard to convert that third down on that first drive of the second half.
Save the game.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that play, I think I said it in Slack, is if the Packers came back and won that game, that's going to be like the turning point.
Yeah.
And I think that was absolutely huge because that's on a third and 10 or rough, something like that, third and long.
Mm-hmm. I think it was two straight completions before that.
Yeah. Yeah. So third and 10 coming right out of the half. You're down by four. Rodgers has just thrown a pick six right before the end of the half. Like you have to come away with points in that situation. And at the very least, like you have to get some decent field position and flip the field a little bit at the absolute minimum. You cannot go three and out. So yeah, that was a huge play. The one that Dobbs dropped in the end zone was just a vintage dime. That one reminded me a little bit of, there was one to Geronimo Allison in one of the Bears games, like week one. It might've even been the Mani game. But just a picture perfect one up that right sideline in the back corner of the end zone. Like it's the accuracy is still there when he steps into his throw and, you know, uses his good mechanics and is reading the field, and it's still there. And it's just so frustrating to see him go into some of his bad habits every once in a while for long stretches too. Like most of that first half was bad Rodgers. And then he kind of, that it seemed like that completion of Lazard got him kickstarted a little bit, and, you know, perfect seam ball to Tonyan to finish that drive with a touchdown. And then he looked, you know, more like his normal self for the rest of the second half.
Elsewhere at running back, AJ Dillon.
Better this week.
Still like not matching up to last year or coming into the season's expectations. I mean, AJ Dillon did technically lead the team in rushing yards last year, and there's no way he's close, right? This year?
No, Jones had him by almost 80 yards coming into this game. Yeah. So, and he, you know, picked up another 35 yards on him today. So yeah, some of the stuff I still don't understand the insistence on using him as the the shotgun draw guy in some of the pony stuff. I get why you want to have Jones motioning out of the formation and doing some of the motion stuff, but I was actually really happy late in the game when they went under center in single back and were handing him the football. That made me very happy to see that. So we'll see where that goes. But yeah, I thought he looked better today than, you know, maybe at any other point so far this season.
The receivers are the spot where I'm like, this is the room for growth position. Mm-hmm. Very clearly, like Dobbs, Watson, we're seeing it. We see the potential. We're also seeing the inconsistency. It's okay, if we could reel this in, this could change what this offense looks like, right? Yeah. Lazard is who he is. Cobb, they're even mentioning, you know, he looks younger, all that stuff. Tonyan, I'm surprised he's not getting more work because, you know, we talked about how when the tackles are healthy, you know, it kind of frees him up more than anyone else in the offense. He did catch the touchdown over the middle, right? But that was 20 of his 22 yards in the game, only had two targets. He was second in targets last week after Romeo Dobbs. Dobbs tied with Lazard 8-8. And then after that's Randall Cobb. And Randall Cobb and Aaron Jones are, I mean, if they're your third options out at receiver, you got problems a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, it was nice to see a little bit of a vintage Lazard game, though. A couple of big plays. I think they said he had three plays of more than 20 yards today, which which was nice to see him getting open and having a little bit of explosives. But the Dobbs thing was, I mean, the ball security, man, that's the biggest thing for him at this point. He had the fumble early, the drop in the end zone. If he can figure out that piece, man, he could really be something special. And, you know, we saw it with Watson. Obviously, the speed is there. The end around touchdown was beautiful. But like the deep ball tracking on that deep shot, that was a little ugly. It wasn't a great ball from Rodgers either, but he just looked completely turned around on it. So, you know, hopefully that'll come. But yeah, if those guys start to figure it out, that I think completely changes the equation. If they can be a little more consistent and, I think that's a, like you said, that's room for growth. And that's a place where as the season goes along, if those guys pick it up, that could be the thing that really turns this offense into something potentially special.
And on that Watson touchdown, Romeo Dobbs is the lead blocker on that, just sacrificing his body. Cause he's
blocking with his butt basically.
Yeah. He's not much of a blocker. Like the effort is there. It's just like the technique. Yeah. It's not necessarily totally polished out at this point. The offensive line, I mean, it's glaring. Elgton Jenkins is not who he used to be.
It's not,
at least right now. Bakhtiari clearly looks way closer to being back than Jenkins. I haven't paid as much attention to Bakhtiari. I wasn't paying attention to if he was favoring, you know, putting all his weight on his right leg like he was last week. He was only out for one or two drives, I think.
I was gonna say, I only noticed people talking about it the one drive. I think it was like the third drive of the game, and after that, I don't remember hearing anything about him swapping with Nyman the rest of the way. Now Nyman was questionable; he was, I guess, sick coming into the game a little bit. Yeah, so who knows? Maybe they planned on rotating him a little more than they did, but it seemed like Bach was out there most of the game. We'll see when we get the snap counts in the morning, just how much he played, but. You know, again, if he makes it through, you know, you keep ramping up his workload in game every week, you know, hopefully at this point, you know, next week after he'll be out there 100% of the time. And then you kind of can figure out, all right, do we want to do something else on the right side? Because you've got Nyman freed up at that point.
Nyman or Tom, like, yeah, I'm willing to go three team race, just like rotate them.
Yep.
Every single player. The Giants don't have a pass rusher right now. So,
yeah,
I'm just like rotate those three in London. Mm-hmm. I think Newman's getting better. Newman hasn't been an issue in like 2 weeks.
I didn't notice any pass protection issues from him. And it's not surprising that when he moves back into guard, things start looking a little bit better for him. Yeah. I think that was always the concern that we had with him was his play out of tackle. And with Jenkins back and moving him to guard, great. You know, that gets him at right guard instead of Jake Hansen, and we're all feeling better. But the Jenkins right tackle thing, just right now, that feels like the weak point on the line, which is a crazy thing to say at this point.
And I know he's banged up too, so like It's always weird with injuries because you never know.
Yeah. Didn't he also have like an ankle thing that was, or maybe not?
He
ankle,
had a,
some
had
other
shoulder.
Yeah. There was something else going on there.
But
he's
off of the injury report for that now.
Yeah.
He was only on the injury report for that for, I think, the week he missed and then the second week.
Got it.
And now he's only on for a knee when he misses practice and stuff. But yeah, it's very weird. It's very weird to look at this offensive line and be like, the guy who's going to be paid top 10 offensive linemen in the sport is the guy who's kind of the weak link right now. And is he going to get healthier? Is he not going to get healthier down the stretch? Did he return too soon? Like,
yeah,
who knows what the heck's going on?
Right. Yeah.
On the defensive side, the defensive line outside of Kenny Clark has been really disappointing to me.
Yeah.
I thought Lowry would be a little bit better. And then Jerron Reed, like, he hasn't, I mean, I know he got the sack today, but it was kind of a cleanup sack off of what Rashawn Gary was bringing. I don't know if Reed's made like a one-on-one play by himself where he actually beat a blocker. It wasn't just someone brain farted and he just got a run through.
Yep.
And that's a problem when your first round pick, Devontae Wyatt, is the fifth defensive lineman off of the bench. And then TJ Slayton hasn't really been getting much burn. Like, he's getting in rotationally, but like, I don't know. Why isn't Slayton in there for Jerron Reed at this point?
I don't have an answer. I'm in the same boat with you. And he was really the one kind of free agent signing from outside the team this offseason. And it sounded like they were really counting on him. And from everything that we had heard out of training camp, right? He was looking great
in one-on-ones and things. Day one, he was basically defensive starter, and they never changed it up.
And that tells me a lot more about the offensive lineman he was going up with or going up against.
That was always my worry.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just like the backup offensive lineman when Bach and Jenkins were out during the preseason. They're like, Jerron Reed is looking really, it's the same stuff coming out of, like, you'll hear this at like Jets camp. And they're like, the Jets defense is actually just really good. Zach Wilson's actually a fine quarterback. And then you get into the season, you're like, they're actually
horrendous. Everybody sucks. Yeah.
They're both really bad. Outside linebacker, it's pretty
Rashawn
much
Gary good,
yeah,
really, really freaking good.
It's as expected, they're rotating these guys a whole lot more than I would like. But I guess the theory is just like, if one of them goes down, if one of the starters goes down, you're kind of screwed. Because I feel like we've seen enough of Enagbare and Garvin at this point. Garvin actually had a play,
he
beat a block, but it ended up, I think it was still Hoyer at that point. Hoyer threw that shot play, got it off right on time, and he kind of lucked out on it.
Seeing Kansas City playing tonight still makes me wonder about if we're going to be ruining the Devontae Wyatt pick over George Karlaftis, who went 30 to Kansas City for a long time.
The show was very much the two Georges.
Yeah.
We were, I think everyone at APC was rooting for the two Georges, and we could have had the two Georges, but we got Wyatt, which not been great. And then Walker, who's been very, I mean, who knows if, you know, Wyatt would have been there if they trade up to, what is it, 34 or wherever they traded up for Christian Watson. I mean, they might've been able to get all three of those guys potentially. Sure. That sucks. Cause you see how good George Pickens is just plucking balls out of the air and all that stuff. And you see how good Karlaftis is playing. Bummer, but
yeah,
gotta live with what we got. At inside backer, the big disappointment for me, like, is Devondre Campbell who he was last year? Because last year he was an all-pro and he looked every bit of it. And now they're not looking great. I don't know if it's just because they're getting out of Penny and not having him play sideline to sideline, and now they're in a ton of nickel and he's having to fit that way, but it's not really different from an inside linebacker's perspective than when they're in their base 3-4, and that wasn't an issue for him. So I don't know what's going on with Devondre, but like, it doesn't seem like he's flying to the football nearly as fast as he was last year. And that his physicality were like the game changers.
Yeah. And when he does get there, he's missing a lot more tackles than he did last season. I think he's already missed more tackles this year than he did like all of last year. I'm looking up Pro Football Reference, had him down for 4 in 16 games last year. They had him down for 5 in 3 games this year. So that doesn't even count today when I think he missed at least another maybe two or three. Yeah. So that's the biggest surprise to me. And you know, maybe that's the kind of thing that regresses to the mean a little bit. I mean, four missed tackles in, you know, in the amount of activity he had last year is a ridiculously small number. I get that, but yeah, that's that. I agree. I think that's the by far the biggest disappointment relative to expectations. I think we hoped for more on the defensive line, but didn't necessarily like expect that the rest of that group outside of Kenny was going to be great. We expected Campbell to at least maintain his play to some extent, and it does feel like he's dropped off quite a bit.
Yeah. Defensive back, I think it's pretty much expectations at this point. We had the like early up and downs with Adrian Amos that were kind of weird. But we should know at this point, Jaire Alexander missed this game with a groin injury. He sustained the groin injury against Tampa, went out, I think, the first drive of that game.
Yep.
Never came back. He missed, I think, Thursday's practice, was listed as questionable. It seemed pretty evident that he was going to be held out, and the team was going to play it fairly conservatively, even though he did try to work it out on the field before this game when they signed Corey Bellantine, I believe is how you say his name.
Yeah.
He has kick return experience, played corner to the practice squad, and then they elevated Keandre Thomas to the active roster from the practice squad today or on Saturday. So it seemed pretty, you know, you do the math and you're like, oh, they're adding corners. We have a corner hurt. It's probably not going to be in this game.
Right.
Russell Douglas started outside again. Keyshawn Nixon came off the bench again to play in the slot. Then Adrian Amos went down with a concussion. He's being evaluated for a concussion, and he got replaced by Rudy Ford, which I thought was interesting because Rudy Ford is the newest member from the safety group to join the team. You know, he was added after initial roster cutdowns. I thought the DBs did fine. It's kind of hard to evaluate when, you know, there's a third string quarterback out there. I mean, net passing yards, including the sacks, right? The quarterbacks had 25 dropbacks for 104 yards. I mean, that was not an NFL team that's
not
they
good.
Were playing against. So
yeah, I think the defense is going to get a little heat for giving up 24 to the, you know, to a third string quarterback, but you got to remember that one
was
of those touchdowns
six.
Is a pick six. Exactly. So 17 points. Obviously you'd like to keep that in check a little bit, but a lot of that was the running game kind of eating up the run defense, especially in the second half. So I don't think you can really fault the pass D too much. There were one or two plays where they let guys get free. A couple of those little rainbow floaters that Zappy had, it did feel like the couple of those balls just hung up in the air for, you know, 10 seconds. You know, the touchdown being one of them. I think there was another one to Aguilar when he kind of got lost in zone, maybe coming across on a deep crosser. But yeah, those two, I think, were the only two like big plays in the passing game I can think of. Everything else, it felt like they were closing to the football quickly. They were physical with their tackles. I mean, Stokes, Amos, Savage, all I think had big TFLs with nice physical plays that they made to close on the football quickly. So that was really encouraging to see that they expected the short passing game and they seemed to be ready for it and were you know, we're sure what they're tackling.
I don't even know what direction the defense needs to take at this point because they got gashed in the run game today, right? And they weren't long runs, but they also weren't short runs. It was just like punches over and over again, right? Like three different guys had carries of like 14 yards or something like that. If you play more aggressive with the corners, right? That then puts them in a position where if they don't beat their blocks, they could be the edge guy, right? And, you know, we could get explosive plays. But if you keep playing off, you're going to rely on this defensive line and Campbell, who's not playing particularly well at this point. So I don't know what direction the team goes. Like, is it just like Campbell, you got to play better. Wyatt or Slayton, one of you needs to replace Jaren Reed. Like,
yeah,
I don't know how feasible that is, though. Like, I don't know if you could count on that this season.
Yep. Yeah, I know.
It's tough. I have some, before we get into vibe checks and all that, I have some stats for you. I crunched the numbers.
Let's do it.
Week four, okay? 75 points the Green Bay Packers have scored. Mm. 75 points. The last time that the Green Bay Packers had a winning record after scoring 75 points or fewer in their first four games of the season was 1978.
Oh, God.
My dad was six. I'm almost 30. Yeah.
Holy shit.
The last time the Packers scored 75 points or fewer at all in the first four games of a season was the 2006 to 2004 stretch. The combined record of the first four games in those three seasons, 2-10. Mm. Not good. Not good. I went back and looked at the last decade of NFL football. Okay. Teams that scored 75 points or fewer the first four games of the season, they're 74-205-1. If you can do really good math mentally, that's
not good.
26.6% win percentage opportunity. So for the season, those teams end up winning 73% of the games. And after week four, it's 40.6%. So that's not necessarily a direct score of like, because you can't score now, you will not score later. But there's a pretty strong correlation there that you're at least going to be below average among the teams last decade, right? So there's 72 teams who have scored less than 75 points in the first month of the year. Nine of them have made the playoffs and three of them won a playoff game. None of them have escaped the divisional round. Those three teams, right? So if we're looking at case studies of an Aaron Rodgers team is scoring this few amount of points, they get to the playoffs and they win the playoff game. These are the case studies for the last decade. So out of 73 teams, these three teams, right? 2012 Seattle Seahawks. That's rookie Russell Wilson.
Yep.
So they go from scoring 75 points in the first month
to Fail Mary was in that first month too.
Yeah.
Oh,
they end up averaging 42.5 points per game in the last month of the season.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's a drastic jump for a rookie quarterback. I feel like we throw that one out, right?
Yep. Yep.
2016 Houston Texans. That was the Brock Osweiler was starting because
Savage
was hurt. And then Derek Carr was hurt. So that's a win technically, but it's a win over Connor Cook, who never started another NFL game in any circumstance ever again or before, frankly. So that's another case study, right? Good. So we're out two. We're out two, guys. The other example is the 2018 Dallas Cowboys. They started off 2-2 and they finished 10-6. The other thing that's like extremely rare is the Green Bay Packers are 3-1. Almost no one who plays this poorly in terms of like scoring. I know it's not all offense because obviously defensive scores and stuff like that and field goals, but teams that don't score usually are not at this record at this point in the season. So you look at the last decade, only six of those 72 teams had a winning record in coming out of week four. Those 2016 Rams, 2012 Eagles, 2019 Bears, 2018 Titans, 2016 Texans that we already just talked about, and the 2017 Bills. So six of the teams that had a winning record, despite scoring this amount of points in the first month of the year, only one of them made the playoffs, and their only victory was beating Connor Cook. It's crazy when you look at all the numbers and you're like, this is setting up for pretty big. I mean, they're supposed to be contenders. Last week we did the SB Nation React stuff. The Packers were, I think, second in the NFC in terms of people thinking they're contenders behind the Rams, who just came off of a Super Bowl win, right? So it's going to get weird soon.
Yeah. Well, and now we look at the point differential too. Not only is it scoring, but you've outscored your opponents by a total of 6 points this season through four games. You know, the Pythagorean record, if you're a believer in that, basically that's a 2-2 team. If you are giving up roughly the same amount of points that you were scoring, that should be a 500 team. So I guess, you know, good on the defense for, you know, keeping it close and finding a way to win games. But
a lot of it's turnovers. I mean, that's the thing that worries me. It's a lot of it's turnovers. It's not
multiple,
even the defense is keeping them off of the field.
Yeah. Multiple giveaways in three of the first four games. That's extremely disconcerting. That's what, three picks for Rodgers in the first four games? When was the last time he had three interceptions in the first month of the season?
I have no idea. It's been a long time. I
have to go look at that too. Yeah. It's weird. It's a weird one, man. But look, this is the first game of a stretch that again, we feel like this game and the next three should all be very winnable games. They pulled it off today. They pulled it off by the skin of their teeth, but They got that third win. Now maybe you can make some hay against Giants, who at this point, they might be down to their third string quarterback because both Daniel Jones and Tyrod Taylor got hurt today. They ended up taking Wildcat snaps with Saquon Barkley at the end of the game because they didn't have a quarterback available. So we'll see what happens there in London next week. Then you get the Jets and Zach Wilson. And then you got Washington and Carson Wentz. Like, those are the games where you build up your point differential, right?
Yeah, and
it should be.
To your point, right? Like, Saquon Barkley's back there. If you're having issues stopping the run with the box that you have playing too high, like, it's not going to stop next week. They're going to lean on that more than ever.
Yeah.
They're going to lean on that more than ever if Jones and Tyrod are both out. So this is – and they're going to have limited practice too, right? Because they're flying out, I think, on Thursday. Are they doing
Thursday? Yeah.
Yeah, they're flying out on Thursday. So they should – I mean, who knows what a walkthrough on Friday even looks like when you're traveling like that. I know we don't have experience with that since, you know, Green Bay hasn't traveled out of the country like that before. So just not good vibes.
Weird.
Not good vibes at all. I think this offense has an actual chance to be bad. And this is the first time I've felt like that. I always thought like they're going to get this stuff figured out. But even this game, they made the adjustments to split back gun that killed them against him. Like, what else can you do? You mess around with the offensive line. You just hope some more shot plays can come down. Like, I don't know what direction you go from here. Cause they've already made adjustments. It's not like they haven't, they've just like stuck to their script for a month and just like gone through it.
It's funny we're saying this too, because it, in a way though, like at the same time that we've got all these issues, it felt like they were a couple plays away, right? The Dobbs makes that catch, they're at 31-24, and you're over 30 for the first time this year. Couple of those shot plays in the first half, the guys were open and Rodgers just missed them. So he makes those throws, you come down with those, and it's a completely different ball game. So I don't know. It's weird to feel like they're so far away and yet so close to figuring it out at the same time.
I mean, again, just looking at the numbers, right? Three of the 72 teams that have played this poorly offensively in terms of scoring, right, have won a playoff game. The odds are stacked heavily against us. I know the team has talent, all that stuff. I think they're probably, and pure in terms of pure talent, probably the second most talented team in the league when they're healthy, behind the Buccaneers. In the NFC, I should say. In the NFC, not necessarily the league.
Yeah.
But there are very few cases where this ends up turning right. And you have to have something like a Russell Wilson just like getting comfortable in his offense throughout the, I mean, they're, that's the only case study you can look at and say, this is how the offense got better. This is the reasoning for the young players developing moving forward. And we're hoping for that. But I'm sure there's been more than one team in the NFL that struggled to score in the first month of a season and said, the young guys will bail me out at some point.
Yeah, that seems like something that would be pretty common these days.
Yeah. Oh, man. The other thing, too. Just to bring this up, only one team went 12 games or more. Only three teams have won 11 games or more under this. I mean, that's the difference between hosting a playoff game or not, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if they're all on the road, imagine. So just using the case study numbers again, right? If they lose the first playoff game that they play in, whatever it is, right? Bye week, divisional, or in the wild card, right? What do we even do from here? I mean, is that like a Rodgers is playing like, I don't know if I should retire or not again. And then LaFleur's on the hot seat. Cause I mean, that's happened a good amount for him only being here for 4 years. If that doesn't end up happening at the end of this offseason or postseason.
I have no idea what you do in that situation. Yeah. None. None at all.
To me, it seems like it always felt like this was more of a rebuilding year for what next year could bring. And I know cap complications and stuff like that, but like the players are still here. Like, as long as you keep like Rashawn Gary in-house, Elgin Jenkins in-house, the players are still here, right? Yep. But what does that do with Rodgers? Because it seems like he's just going to go with whatever wave of dopamine ayahuasca is going to hit him. Like, you can't bank on him returning if they lose in the wild card round or something. Like, I'm officially anxious for the season. I never felt like we were going to lose this game because my mind could not It literally could not fathom losing to Bailey Zappi. I'm just like, at some point we're going to win. It's going to be like a one score game. It's very dumb. We're going to feel terrible about it, but we're going to end up winning. I'm actually worried for the season though.
Yeah. Yeah. This felt like one of those 2019 games all over again, where they won so many of these close games that shouldn't have been close. But again, when it's come on the heels of the issues that we've seen the first 3 weeks, it's a different feeling than we had in 2019, I think. So
goodness. All right. Man. We kind of touched on it already, but let's go to break and then we'll come back and talk about we'll speak on the vibe checks.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
And we're back. All right. Offensively, I'm officially at like a 5.
Yep.
I'm scared of the rookies. I'm scared when Matt LaFleur, the reporters are talking about Matt LaFleur's in the locker room, like giving Romeo Doubs pep talks after the game. I don't like that. Ooh. I don't like anything that involves, like, I don't want to say like head cases, but like the idea of like a player losing confidence, right?
Yeah.
I don't need that at all, especially not on October 2nd. they can't get the ball to Bobby Tonyan, right? The offensive line is looking weird at the very least. Like, I don't know if,
right?
I'm not sure Newman should be a 17 game starter. I am not sure Jenkins should be the right tackle. I'm not sure what's going on with Bakhtiari because they rotated him out mid-game for like one or two drives, and now they're about to go play an international game. I mean, they're going to travel like crazy over the next couple games, so I don't know how that impacts his rehab.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers yelling at Josh Myers, snap the fucking ball. Right? Though A.J. Dillon like isn't nearly as good as he was last year, in my opinion. There's a lot of things on offense that I'm like, this is – if they score – a touchdown in any game for the remainder of the season, I wouldn't be surprised because they don't look good.
Yeah. And yet I'm still at like a 5 because they feel like they're that close in a lot of instances. Again, so many of these plays that could be made, and just a little more consistency, a little better hands from Doubs. You know, again, not fumbling in that first half, like a little bit more trust in his mechanics from Rodgers, and I think we're there. A little bit more creativity. They, like we said earlier, we saw it a little bit with the pony today, but just, you know, bring a little more of those wrinkles out, and it feels like it could be where it needs to be. But just, we haven't seen it yet, and until we get one of those, you know, 40 point performances against a bad team, I'm still going to be hesitant and concerned.
Yeah. And all these teams like are going to be doing the math and being like, we need them. Like the Packers are a game to highlight for them. Right.
Yeah.
LaFleur even mentioned after the game, like, he's like, yeah, as soon as you start thinking like you're going to beat some of these teams, like automatically, like that's when they creep up on you.
Yep.
Seems like maybe that's a little bit of the case, but like, they had talked about the Patriots and taking them serious all week. And like Bisaccia went on like a 20-minute rant about like how good the Patriots special teams are and like how that's going to be the matchup of the season for them, for the special teams guys and all that stuff. So it's kind of weird that LaFleur even brought that up. Defensive side, I'm also back like down to like a 7. I think is probably the right, because they're so talented.
Yep.
There's no way you could have them like much lower than that. Obviously, you hope Adrian Amos is fine. Jair comes back off of that groin fine, but that defensive line is not good. There's been no depth on the line of scrimmage that has really developed throughout the first 4 games of the season. I don't know. I mean, Garvin might be the guy who's like developed the most out of the interior and edge rushers so far, and still don't think Garvin's very good. So, like, nice. You have a fourth edge rusher now. Cool. Yeah. I guess.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, the hope here is you've got three games against teams in the bottom half of the league on offense. Yeah. Giants, Jets, Washington. Washington just put up 10 points in Dallas. So you hope that we can use these next 3 weeks, figure it out a little bit, find, get, I don't know if it's again, a confidence or consistency thing with like Devondre, you know, get him back a little closer to the level he was at last year, get a couple of these guys healthy and try to right the ship, maybe up front on the run defense a little bit before you have to deal with Buffalo in a month. So I'm right there with you. I think that the talent has got to win out at some point, and there's certainly no shortage of that on the defense. So and again, the secondary has played pretty well the last couple of weeks, and I think that's something you can hang your hat on, and you've got one of the best edge rushers in the league, and fundamentally one of the best defensive linemen in the league. It's just would be really nice if you had something in between those two guys to actually do something.
So I almost kind of think like when they put five DBs out there, right, and they have to decide between the nickel, which is like the 4-2, and then the penny, which is like the 5-1. I almost feel like they're better in the penny, but it keeps one of their best players off of the field. It keeps Quay off of the field, and they can do some stuff. Like they've gotten into penny from nickel personnel a little bit, where they end up having one of those inside backers play basically like outside linebacker, just play off of the edge. And then you get a guy like Gary lined up one-on-one with a guard. Yeah. And I almost wonder if like, that's the way to do it, because if you want your best players on the field, but you want to be in your best formation, it's going to have to be something funky. Cause they don't look like they can stop the run in nickel right now. And if you have to get in penny, that's fine. And Devondre Campbell thrived in that role last year, playing as that like one inside linebacker in that situation. But you're going to have to move some guys around. And if it's Quay setting an edge, like I think Quay can set an edge. I think Gary can beat the crap out of a guard. Like if it has to be that, I think they can do it.
Well, and that maybe that's a role where those two guys are better suited anyway. I mean, we know we talk about that's Gary's one biggest weakness, right? Is setting the edge against the run.
He had a couple today too. Everyone was excited about. I understand the two sacks, but I saw tweets that were like, he has eight tackles and two sacks. And I'm like, he has eight tackles because they're running at him right now. Yep. I mean, they were running outside zone right at him. I mean, that's something I talked with Mark Schofield from SB Nation on Intercepted about this on Friday, but they kind of like ditched their outside zone stuff after a week, you know? So the fact that they went back to it, I mean, that's game planned, right? I mean, they game planned, we want to run outside zone at Rashawn Gary, and they're pretty successful at it for a good amount of the game. Not to say there isn't positives in Gary's game, because obviously he's a great pass rusher, but he does have some limitations.
Yep. Yep. Oh. Man.
Special teams. I feel pretty good about the special teams. They were like two weird returns that like went longer than they should have, but it didn't kill them.
I think the interesting thing to me was that when Ford had to come on, I think we talked about it at halftime a little bit. When Ford had to come on for Amos at safety, it looked like they were mixing up the flyers on the punt team a little bit. Not having him and Nixon both out there on every punt. And they had them both out there at the one at the end where they needed to get the ball down deep, which worked out great. And they pinned him inside the five. But yeah, it seemed like they were kind of rotating them in and out a little bit, to since they were playing a decent amount of nickel, didn't want to have both of those guys cashed on punt team before having to come out and play a full drive on defense.
And I think New England, I mean, for all the stuff Bisaccia said, right, I think he was right that like this is a really well-coached team. I mean, they were trying to get after him in the punt game. They're trying to get after him in field goal protection too, right? And they were able to make the most of it. I mean, there were some close calls, but it's not like anything egregious like we saw last year. Like it was because they have a body on a body, and then it's, oh, okay, that guy had to fair catch it because he has no blockers. And I think you live with that. I mean, they passed the test for me, is I guess what I should be saying.
Agreed. Yeah. Just like we've been talking all year and all since January, if this team can have, you know, average special teams that doesn't make glaring mistakes. That is a huge upgrade from what we've had the last couple of years. And I would argue that, again, yeah, they had a couple of issues with coverage here and there, but you know, they got the big downed punt late in the game when they really, really needed it. And I think, you know, I know Pat O'Donnell got player of the week last week, special teams player of the week, for his like five balls pinned inside the 20. He had, I think, another like three maybe this week. A couple big ones. And I have been very surprised at how big of an upgrade he feels like he's been punting the ball, and specifically, you know, pinning teams inside the 20. That feels like that's been a huge deal for this unit so far this season.
Yeah, because Bohorquez could, I mean, he could boot them.
He'd blast the hell out of it.
But... he was inconsistent a little bit too. Like,
yep.
You'd have like the random shanks that he would have too. And we haven't seen a single one from Donald.
Yeah, both he and J.K. Scott were good for, you know, one of those every other game or so. It seemed like that you'd just have a 20 yarder out of nowhere. And yeah, knock on wood, but you know, O'Donnell's been real consistent, and again, his placement has been great.
Yeah. How many of these games, what do you think the Packers record is if Mo Drayton is still the special teams coordinator?
Oh God.
I think they're 1-3. I think legitimately they could have lost this game because it was so close. And I think they would have lost probably last week.
Last week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably.
They're 1-3. That's crazy. Like, I know we ran the poll for the SB Nation Reacts thing where we asked people at APC just like random questions just to get you guys voting, seeing how you guys feel about the team in general. And I think like half of the people said special teams met expectations. I think it was like a 40-10 split for like exceeded versus like fell short of expectations. So I think people are like slightly impressed, but not super impressed about the special teams at this point. I think a lot of that honestly has to do with like the return game. And
yeah,
I think that's really what people pay attention to, like that. And then like obvious gaffes, right? Like last year where we're just so bad at like handling snaps. That shouldn't happen, right? But outside of the return game, I think the special teams made a huge difference.
Like, yes,
Bisaccia, really excited about having him here. Hopefully, for my sake, not for his sake, but for my sake, like, I don't know, it'd be nice if you stayed as a special teams coordinator instead of becoming a head coach somewhere.
Absolutely. Like I said, I think I mentioned it last week that like how many years did Dave Taub work for, you know, was it Chicago and then Kansas City forever? It would be really nice to have one of those guys around for a while.
Yeah. And it's nice that we're spending on it, because that seemed like the big thing, right? Because LaFleur tried to sign, what's his name, Rizzi, the guy who's in New Orleans now. He tried to sign Rizzi and make him the highest paid special teams coordinator, and that got axed by Mark Murphy, which is why they went with two in-house guys before they ended up with Bisaccia. So the fact that they're spending on the position now, and there's conversations like with the front office. It's crazy that the front office just full on came out and was like, yeah, we're rostering guys because of special teams, and we've never done that before. It's like, what the hell was Ty Summers doing? Because he wasn't playing defense. Like, I'm happy special teams has a place in the room now, because
agreed,
it's one of two games that I don't think they would have won otherwise.
Yeah. Well, but before we go, I got one question for you. So outside of, like, we know what we've just broken down how we feel about the Packers right now, but who do we know is better than the Packers in the NFC right now? Probably Philly.
Probably Philly. Like, I think the way Philly matches up specifically too.
Yeah.
Worries me, because that's they're tough. The team. New England did some stuff, and maybe I'll break it down this week, where they were getting a lot of tight ends in the game. And whenever you get a lot of tight ends against the 3-4 and you divorce the tight ends and receivers, you end up getting weird looks where it's like, oh, we can throw a whole shot, but the like curl flat defender is Preston Smith. So I know that we can, like, there's no one covering him underneath. Mm-hmm. And they were doing that with a third string quarterback, right? Philly's a team that uses a lot of tight ends, right? So they can do that, those same type of things if they want to, just like from a structural standpoint. And then that offensive line is really good. And then defensively, a lot of talent on the defensive line.
Yeah.
Guys are playing pretty good at DB for them. Their linebackers aren't great. That's the big thing I'll say about Philly, but I think they're number one. depending on how healthy Tampa is, still worried about Tampa. I'm not going to not be worried about Tampa. That's still Tom Brady. I'm not worried about the Rams. I'm not worried about the Chargers. Spoiler alert, I'm not really worried about the Giants. So, like, any of these other, like, one-loss teams and stuff, it's not really doing it for me in the NFC, but obviously you can always get got. I mean, San Francisco showed us that last year.
Right. Yeah, it just, I guess my point there to bring that up is just the NFC is still so wide open. And 100%. So, you know, being 3-1 at this point, even with all the issues that we've documented and gone over with this team, everything's still totally out in front of them. They can absolutely, you know, still be a, you know, still work their way to a top seed if they get a couple of these issues ironed out.
It's just like full blown, like Dobbs Watson watch at this point, right? I mean, it's if they can develop, this team will be good. And I guess
those guys in the right side of the offensive line. Yep, exactly.
Yeah, because I think the talent on defense isn't the problem outside of defensive line, but the structure is going to be interesting. I mean, Joe Barry, we have some easy games coming up before Buffalo, right? Is he going to look at that and just say, like, well, because they're easy, we can just line up in quarters and we don't have to worry about anything? Or is it going to be like, okay, we're finally going to have to start mixing in this cover three and cover one stuff so we can work out the kinks in it, spinning from too high, so that by the time we play Buffalo, that we can actually do this? Because they got to put more pressure on teams defensively. Again, I think they've been playing solid, but those turnovers and, like, particularly well-timed turnovers have bailed them out of some big situations that could have spiraled in a completely different direction.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about Wisconsin? Who are you rooting for? Wisconsin Badgers.
Oh, my gosh.
There's at least one person listening to this that learned that Paul Chris was fired via this podcast. People have alleged that they played jump around when Paul Chris was fired.
I heard about that at Lambeau. That's
I'm not sure if they actually did that or if it was just a weird coincidence, but that people are running with.
I think it's one of those where they started doing it in the fourth quarter at Lambeau on a fairly regular basis anyway. So I think that's probably a coincidence. But no, I mean, I'm glad Jim Leonard is getting the interim job. I mean, he's the only logical choice on that coaching staff for now to at least get the rest of the season to figure out what he can do. I want to see if Bobby Engram, the offensive coordinator, can actually, you know, do something a little more creative with that offense, because I think he's been held back by Chris a little bit. I mean, the couple names that are out there, Lance Leopold, the former Whitewater head coach, went to Buffalo, and now he's making Kansas actually, you know, relevant again. Yeah, right now, so. That's insane. So, I mean, he'd be in the short list. It's just, this was his, like, this Saturday, that loss to Illinois was definitely his, like, Mike McCarthy 2018 Cardinals game moment where, okay, this is it. We just can't do this anymore. And, you know, it's rough. It's not a position that Badgers fans have been in. I mean, I think I saw that the last time that Wisconsin actually fired a head coach was in 1989. I was like 2 years old at that point. Yeah. It's been a heck of a run of consistency. So the only other thing I have to add is that it just hurt that much more that Bielema was the one to do it with Illinois at Camp Randall. Like, that just freaking sucks. I know some people out there listening have probably heard my story about Bielema when I was on campus in Madison. I won't recap that too much here, but that guy's an interesting character, and there's some stories about him that we won't get too deep into, but it hurt that he was the one to finally, you know, deal the death knell for Chris's tenure. So
I still have no idea. 24 carries. I only watched the box. Or I only looked at the box score. I didn't watch the game.
Oh my god!
24 carries for 2 rushing yards. You have an NFL back.
And I don't know how that
happens. That was the guy who left you.
Yeah.
At home. That's not great. After a 4-year decline, and all the Badgers fans in the APC Slack talk about this 4-year decline that they've been on.
You know, and that being, it's supposed to be the game that you just got taken to the on the road. You're coming home against an Illinois team that you're favored probably by, I don't even know what the spread was, probably like 2 touchdowns. And you're supposed to come home pissed off, beat the crap out of them, and, you know, get back on track. And instead you get blown out by 24. That starts at the top. There's only one person to blame for that. And yeah, now he's out of a job. So here we are. It's going to be weird. It's going to be a weird offseason, man. It'll be interesting to see what Leonard does, if he ends up getting the job long term, or if they look outside. I don't know.
Leonard, who famously turned down the Packers defensive coordinator job.
And I think that was, I suspect that was at least in part because he was seen as the guy in waiting.
Yeah.
And I'll be surprised if he doesn't get the job, especially if they look better down the rest of the season, down the stretch. If they look like they're improved, I think he's practically a shoo-in. But yeah, this is uncharted territory for Wisconsin fans of my generation or younger. So
the coaching search is always fun. As an Oregon fan,
oh my gosh,
basically never dealt with a coaching search until recently, and has just perpetually lived in a coaching search. Get excited! You guys are going to be listening. You guys are going to be sharing like every Brent McMurphy tweet from here on for the next like 3 months. It's going to be really fun. You're going to be tracking like where Matt Campbell is at all times. God. Cause that's gotta be another one.
I was about to mention him earlier. I didn't bring him up cause I know the Nebraska fans are all over him, I think. But I think
he's all over Nebraska too.
Maybe that's what it is, but all right. Just Wisconsin fans out there, if you're listening, say it with me. We don't want Urban Meyer. Period. End of story. Not that he's coming anyway. Not that he would consider it, but don't even start that crap.
I think he would consider it because I don't know how many ADs would consider him. They had that poll last year. Or let's get out on this note, but
yeah,
they had that poll last year where it was like 90% of FBS ADs said that they would not even call Urban to have him be a candidate. Like,
well, I hope Chris McIntosh was one of those 90%.
Yeah. All right, guys. Keep it tuned to the feed this week. We got a bunch of stuff. I'm sure we're going to have a lot of takes coming out, film breakdown, all that stuff to kind of explain and contextualize what the heck we just watched, because it was as baffling to me as it was to anyone. I almost couldn't believe that they were going to lose. So keep an eye out for that. Monday, we'll have hopefully good injury updates on some of these guys and snap counts.
We'll do it. Go Pack, go.